Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting, broadcasting, broadcasting to the world, broadcasting to the world, to the world, to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
All day, all night, all the time. BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul.
Welcome to Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley on the Blake Radio Network. On each and every show, Doc takes you inside the world of sports to hear from the movers, shakers, and decision makers. I know you thought there were seven wonders of the universe, where here's the eighth, Doc Stanley.
Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth, on the Blake Radio Network. Rainbow Soul is a channel. Sports in Depth is the show. John Coltrane. Dear Lord, that's what we do. We stop and we pray. Dear Lord, thank you for another day, another Sunday. Thank you for the little things we so largely take for granted. Thank you for being our God. Thank you for being
what they want
to tell us. Thank you for blessings unseen. All definitely unmerited and unwanted. But we thank you, dear Lord. And give us so much not what we want, but what we need. More importantly, dear Lord, let your will be first and foremost in our lives. And we ask these blessings and all the blessings in the holy name of Jesus. Amen. Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul Channel. Sports in Depth is the show. One more time, Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul is the channel. Sports in Depth is the show. And the posse will be lining up. Lady A will join us, as well as Dusty Harvey Farmer, who wrote that great book about Yankee Stadium. Did the same thing about Fenway Park. And I've got the book, Remembering Fenway Park. I've got the book in front of me. And we will talk to Harvey in about a half an hour. And in that time, we'll get a chance to talk some boxing and a host of other things. Up until then, like I said, Destino Baby Lois will be joining me. Lady A will be joining me. And we'll talk boxing, we'll talk baseball, we'll talk a lot of things. Cedric Raymond, C-Wings, will try to give us a call from location, getting the latest update on what's happening in the world of football, what's going to happen there. And we've got Destino, who's finally joined us here. Dusty. And he's going to talk.
This is my second dialing, but okay. Good afternoon, I'm here.
Yeah, well, hey, you know, you're Second Valley, and we're looking at you. You're 5 minutes late. Go stand up in the corner.
I get timeout.
No. Just stand there. You know what I mean? Leave the candy on the desk. We'll get that.
I could only stand on one leg.
Hey, listen. How many times I got to tell you? Pledge that thing before the show.
What's happening?
Lady A has joined us here, too. Boxing.
Lady
we'll
A,
up
how you doing?
Half hour of Joe. And then Harvey Farmer will be joining us at 9 o'clock. We'll talk baseball. I finally got that book, Remember Fenway Park. And you know, let's just jump right at you real quickly. Looking at things now, with ladies going first, we'll start with Lady A. We've got a big slate here, but the big thing we talked about the other day, Lady A, and once again reiterate and rehash the situation from last week's fight with Paul Williams. Judges got in trouble there. Talk about that, Lady A.
Yeah,
they got suspended. Apparently there was a question. There was no corruption or anything found by the committee, the New Jersey committee.
Right.
But they did suspend for all three, indefinitely, actually, all three judges that were involved in the fight.
Right.
Yeah, one more time, the scores on that fight, 116,
114, 115, 114, and one was a draw.
I was going to recite those scores, but you see, Lady A is on top of this because she felt that Paul Williams did lose the fight.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it was a thing that she was leaning toward the Latin fighter, but I didn't want to go there with that. But you know,
not at all. I just I felt based on the prior show. Again, I think everything just needs clarity and having that judge, mm-hmm. a judge to kind of, you know, bring some insight on how mm-hmm. judges do come up with some of the scores
judges
they do, I think was relevant in this situation. And he even felt that, you know, there was some
impropriety,
maybe not even just so impropriety, but just lack of experience.
Hold on. There it is. But you know what? How are you going to get experience if you don't judge the fight? And this was not a title fight.
Well, again,
it wasn't a title fight. There hasn't been people who thought Williams won the fight, so it's not like if everybody thought Williams didn't win the fight. I thought Williams won the fight, but more importantly, my thing here, Lady A and Dusty, how do these guys all of a sudden become the poster child for bad judging when it's happened through the course of boxing? Let's go back to Dusty. Okay,
yeah.
Okay. Let's go back to that classic rumble with De La Hoya and Trinidad. I mean,
can you tell me, answer you, because I know Dusty's going to talk ad infinitum. Just to add, you have to begin somewhere, and I think that we could go on and talk about fights like. You know, people could go on and on. Even though some people may be partial, they say Chavez-Whitaker fight was, you know, that was a controversial fight. Wright versus Hopkins,
mm-hmm.
Taylor versus Hopkins won. Williams versus Martinez was also one that they said that they felt Martinez won the fight. I mean, you could even go back and say, some people may even say De La Hoya Trinidad was a controversial fight also. But,
right.
you know, I mean, you, I believe that you have to start somewhere and set precedent somewhere. Maybe this is a fight where they're going to set precedence. If you go back to what Chuck Williams was saying in our interview with him, he even said, you know, instead of, just to answer your question, instead of you having something, you know, where you're saying, oh, well, you know, the judges, it's not a title fight, so when I have you, how they're going to get the experience, he clearly delineated that for us in his interview where he stated, hey, let's have two experienced judges and one that may be new to the game, to the fight game, and we could kind of get a feel for how he does his judging, which I think in this situation would be relevant.
Well, you see, this is all Band-Aid after the mistake effect. You see,
well, Dusty, with all due respect, that may be true. That may be true, but you have to guess. That may be true, but something has to be done.
No. In line with what you're saying, Lady A, first of all, I question the fact that this was a comeback for Paul Williams, one. I was concerned about Arislandi Lara. That was too much of a tough dude for a comeback after a horrific knockout. Two. Three, why was the fight 12 rounds? Three. And at the same let me finish.
I'm trying to get you to understand,
if this fight was so important, why not take these inexperienced judges and let them do preliminaries, man, before they come up to the big show?
But Dusty, they probably did preliminary. I mean, what I'm saying is the point I make. I agree with you 100% on. I can understand why it was a 12 round fight, and it wasn't a title fight. And the point that you come up with some
what
three
title fight?
Delicious
it wasn't
points,
a title fight.
Huh?
It wasn't it a title, wasn't a title fight.
That's what I'm saying. I don't understand why it was a 12 round fight.
Yeah.
And not only that, what we dovetail on again here is how dumb Paul Williams' people is. A 12-round fight, you know what I mean, against a guy that he didn't have to. Listen, say what you want, but his comeback fight should have been a 3-round knockout over a tomato can to build his confidence back up.
Can I just say something? I'm sorry.
Yeah,
go ahead. No, what I was going to say was that okay, we all know that that based on his prior fights, he has had problems with southpaws. And in this situation, I just don't think, and I think we had spoken earlier, a couple of shows prior, where you guys were saying, you know, oh, I think Paul Williams is going to make the adjustment. Based on what we saw, I don't think he is ever going to make that adjustment.
He's
unless he really steps outside of that box. And I do think that one of the main things that I got out of the, because Doc, I know that you were at the fight, but, you know, I saw some excerpts on HBO that maybe you weren't privy
right.
to. But based on one of the things that Max Kellerman had said to him, he had even brought to his attention that he said to him clearly, you know, are you going to change trainers and maybe try
Absolutely.
To change?
Yeah.
And I think that he felt like this is what I've been using all along. Why would I change
exactly.
my style? But
right.
clearly,
point here,
you
okay.
can...
Hold up. Point here. Okay. Point here. Let me come in here again. Okay. He said at the press conference, okay, and we've talked about this before, Dusty, and he said at the press conference, and you know, you didn't make Lady A, and first of all, he said after he got knocked out by Martinez that he would have done the same thing he did to get knocked out. Then at the press conference, he said that he was going to keep on fighting the way he has been fighting.
And his trainer did the same thing.
But Dusty, it's even worse than this. I mean, you know what it is here? This is a guy, and we've said this on this show, and you have said it, and Harold has said it. This is a guy who, at a young age, was grabbed by some people who thought they knew what they were talking about. And
mm-hmm.
right now, my man Michael from Bang Boxing said that unless his corner tells him to change, he's not going to change. So, Dusty, you couldn't pull him on the side and say, Paul, I think you should be fighting. I said, Angelo Dundee couldn't pull him on the side and say, Paul, right
Absolutely.
Now, if his corner doesn't
but,
tell him what to do, he's not going to do it.
What reinforces that is that his trainer himself, to Max Kellerman, he says, we have no reason to change. That's the
but,
way
but,
Paul, his
but,
trainer's saying
Doc,
the same thing.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. Doc,
his
I was
no,
saying
I mean,
the same thing.
But the bottom line is here, Dusty, is that's the mindset of that camp. And here's
but Doc,
a guy.
Look, can I just say something? If you're getting the crap beat out of you every time from the same angle over and over and over again, you're getting hit as hard as he's getting hit. Don't you think that should be enough to get you to wake up and change?
You yourself, exactly. You're right.
I obviously I'm not, you know, I haven't been watching boxing for 30, 40 years the way you guys have. I mean, I've been watching boxing since I was 7.
Hold on. Lady A,
I'm not
going to
say
calm
how
down.
Old.
Listen,
but,
Lady A, you have
by the way, guys, thank you for wishing me a
Dusty.
Happy birthday. Thank you, guys. I appreciate that. Thank you for wishing me a happy birthday last Sunday.
Could we get there? But you know what? Had you not played hooky on the show, you would have got happy birthday greetings.
Excuse me, but I was allowed to take the day to celebrate. Thank you, guys. I appreciate that. Thank you. Anyway, like I was saying, if you're getting the crap kicked out of you over and over again, wouldn't you
Absolutely.
Make it part of your you know, your game plan to try to alter it and make
you
a better fighter? I
don't
know.
What we have here, gang, is, in the words of Harold Westing, sad and touching. But this is not just Paul Williams. This is the core of this sport. And this is why Harold is so upset. This is why Dusty will sit there and watch two roaches before two guys. This is what is wrong with boxing. And John Condon told me this 3 decades ago, that he went down to Gleason's gym and he saw a kid down there training throwing a jab up in the air. Who throws a jab up in the air? But these guys are caught at an early age. Okay, by people who have no idea what's going on. And listen, he's been successful.
Doc, too, you know, remember when we were talking to Emmanuel Stewart, what he said to us that day at the Sergio Martinez press conference about the fundamentals of boxing and where they have gone.
Right.
And that's why the sport has taken the turn that it has taken. I don't know if you remember that when we were at the Paul Williams press conference. Remember?
This is the main reason why, and Dusty, you got to jump on this, why Bernard Hopkins can still fight because nobody else can, Dusty.
Nobody, absolutely. He's the mongoose of the modern boxing age. The mongoose of my time was Archie Moore, who would play games all over
Dusty,
the place.
The mongoose of your time was Moses, okay? That's what the mongoose of your time was. That's to the Mongol, your son. Let's get it right. And Lady A, next, that I haven't been watching boxing as long as Dutchy, so don't put me in that class.
Okay.
Okay.
I come from
the bare knuckle days. Okay. So, but what I'm trying to that's why Hopkins, you're right, Doc, is so successful. He's a veteran who knows the squared circle, backwards and forward and blind. And he knows that these guys don't have the talent or the ability or the staying power to adjust and readjust and adjust.
But that's
you know, and the other thing, too, is, I mean, I don't know if, I mean, Doc had mentioned it a while ago, too, was the fact that, you know, boxing is about making those adjustments, you know, in the ring. And, you know, I mean, if you have one set fight where you fight, I mean, eventually when someone figures you out, you are done.
But Lady A,
you know,
you have to understand, he doesn't have, see, there's a thing here. Okay, Dusty's my trainer. Okay, now, there's a certain time in my career, I can train myself. I know what I have to do. But I need Dusty to say, hey, Doc, you know what? Hey, this guy, you know what?
I'm watching
this guy
you.
Is open for a left hand. Fake the right, throw the left. Or, hey, Doc, you know what? Fight him inside. This is what Emmanuel Stewart does. This is what Angelo Dunn did. This is what Bowie Fischer does. This is what Yank Durham. This is where your Buddy McGurk. They become a Ray or self.
They become a strategy.
You know what I mean? So, but you know, Paul Williams' corner. I mean, every round, and you know, he came and they said nothing to this guy. And now I tell you what makes it even perpetrates the fraud that. I thought he pulled the fight off, but he didn't run away with this fight. But, you know, you have this one thing here. If he's winning, why should he change? I mean, that's his mindset. But the point is, he's winning, Dusty, but he's not learning.
Exactly. Like I said before, that saying does not apply in boxing. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. This is why, you know, really, that's why I admire the Pacquiao's. I admire guys that, look, I won, but I know I made some mistakes. I'm going back to the gym and see what the mistakes were so I can correct them.
How much of that is Pacquiao, and how much of that is Freddie Roach?
Well, it's a combination of both, Doc.
Okay.
It's a combination of both. Okay, so but the fact of the matter is that there is room for improvement. Now, one of the things you mentioned, Emmanuel Stewart, my God, the miracle worker of boxing. Look what he's done for Miguel Cotto in the last two fights. How disciplined, how he talked to him between rounds in the Mayorga fight. He's trying to juke you. He's trying to get you out of your form. You stay behind your jab. You sit behind the jab. And this is what you operate from. And this is how you... And Miguel Cotto has followed the plan. He's a willing student with a great teacher. What do you think, again, saves the Klitschko's? Emmanuel Stewart. And yet, 2 weeks ago, Vladimir did not follow the script, but David Hayes was a foregone conclusion, so let's just bury him. But what I'm saying is that if a trainer tells me or tells an interviewer, well, why should we change? You know, we fought this way the same way. My God, your boy just got knocked unconscious 6 months ago. What are you telling me?
And Dusty, you could agree with me or not agree with me. I mean, Doc and I were talking about this the other night. I'm just throwing it out there. But, you know, you get to the point where you have to look at that fight and say, wait a minute, had the guy weighed a little more and had a little bit more behind that punch, he would have gotten hurt again. He would have gotten knocked out again.
He would have gotten knocked out if he had the half of Martinez's punch because he was hit solid. But what I was trying to interject here, looking at the history of Paul Williams, the most feared man in boxing was a crock of
nonsense. Stop it, Dusty, stop it.
No. I'm repeating
Dusty,
nonsense.
Where did that come from? I'm looking at this guy. I don't see. When's the last time he knocked out somebody, Dusty?
It was the hype. But what I'm trying to tell you is that they created this mystique, this myth, and yet Paul Williams, in all his 45 fights, has fought the same way. You saw
also,
his vulnerability.
But
also,
you got to look at it like this. I believe that he's known for throwing over 1,000 punches per fight, which he did this
he's
fight.
He's a busy fighter.
Which he did. However, Dusty, he only landed less than a quarter of the punches that he threw. So exactly. He only landed 220 some odd, I think it was 225 or 220 right. some odd punches. So even if you look at it that way, you're still not seeing a Paul Williams, you know, that you had seen before, because at least even when he was throwing a high punch volume, he was still landing more. He wasn't landing anything here.
That's
so, you know, you relatively speaking, you're looking at two different extremes now.
Right. This is why, Lady A and Doc, you have to look, and this is where, at not only this fight, but at all fights, you have to look at the competence of the judging. They get swayed. They get swayed by the volume of punches who are not connecting, in a sense. And they get blinded, so-called blind, or sidetracked by the fact that, oh, for example, Lady A, you hit me with 30 punches and 25 miss or just go over my head. Oh, this guy's busy. Oh, she's busy. But then I hit you with three solid injury-prone, staggering-prone shots, and they miss it. They are carried away.
But isn't this human error, Dusty? I mean, you bring up a point here. I mean, he's looking at the volume of Paul Williams, and they get absorbed into this.
Exactly.
And how much of this is pre-hype? Here's a guy throws 100 punches around. But a lot of this is human error, which we have to kind of expect, Dusty.
Well, it is human error, but in a sense like this, in a fight like this of this magnitude, his combat, you got to be a little more competent. And those judges, to me, were not professional enough or experienced enough to cover or judge a fight of that magnitude. There was, many years ago, if I can just interject this history, there was a big battle, junior middleweight, between Shane Mosley and Oscar De La Hoya.
Yeah.
In my opinion, to this day, Oscar beat Shane Mosley. His father was desperate. You're not throwing punches. Oscar's beating you to the punch. He's out jabbing you. Where's your jab? And throw punches. Throw anything. Hit him on the elbow.
And also, shoulders. Dusty, unbeknownst to me, based on our prior show, unbeknownst to me, they really aren't supposed to be swayed by that, correct?
Right.
Because based on what we heard before, volume of punches does not dictate a person winning the fight.
Exactly, but
you know the judge has to go based on what has been landed and the power behind the punches
and the effect of the punches.
Correct,
exactly.
But I didn't know that.
By the way, guys, I learned a lot the last show.
Here we go.
By the way, guys, I did not know that. I learned a lot that last show about how exactly they come about.
Yeah, but you know what?
Scoring, just the scoring part. I'm sorry.
How they're supposed to do it is one thing. How they do it is another. Because it's
No, I understand that. But for the listeners, you know, I thought it was a great show because he went into exactly what the judges are supposed to be looking at.
Okay, great. That's all great. But how many fights have the judge got it wrong? Okay.
Oh, come on. I mean, I just drew a whole list of some that, you know, come on.
Of course. There's so many.
Did you see Friday night ESPN?
Teddy Atlas. Did you see Teddy Atlas? He was so pissed off.
Oh, yeah.
He said, that's what's wrong with boxing today.
Here we go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We go back to De La Hoya and Trinidad. We go back to when Dusty was just a baby, Cain and Abel. Okay, then we go back to when he finally got to high school. And we go to, I mean, you remember the fight with Jersey Joe Walcott and Joe Louis. And Joe Louis knew he lost the fight and left the ring early.
Knowing that he lost.
That's right. And they went in and got him. So, I mean, I think you're making too much of this. It happened so many times. This was not a world championship fight. This was not a fight on HBO. And so if for nothing else, all these guys were in the same ballpark because they saw it the same way. And we had one judge at 117, 112, and one judge at 114, 114, and one judge at one. They saw it all the same way.
Yeah,
so,
but you know what, Doc? I'm sorry.
Line.
I can't agree with you on that.
How can you not discourse?
You know why? Just at the beginning
lady
of what
a,
you said.
Lady A,
you know why?
Lady, it's nothing. The scores tell you they saw it the same way.
I understand that. However,
lady
based
a,
on what
lady
the previous
a,
statement
the
was. I'm sorry. The previous statement you made, I can't agree with. I'm sorry.
Let me tell you. Go ahead.
I'm not asking you to agree. It's nothing to agree about. The judges saw it the same way.
You have to understand that. Ken Smith wrote a column.
I understand
one time.
The error, but the point is the judges saw it the same way. I mean, and so
well,
somewhere along the line, all these guys were in the same mindset.
they were wrong. But what I'm trying to tell you is that Tim Smith wrote a very intricate column many years ago after the count, because there was a big controversy, and De La Hoya went to the commission to have the voting change in his favor of the Mosley fight. And Tim Smith wrote an article saying, you know, boxing, you're watching boxing, is three-dimensional. And in order to really see what's going on, you have to be at the fights to see the real blows or the real connection. And I disagreed, because here was George Foreman, who was a commentator. He says, oh, man, Shane Mosley just landed a tremendous right hand on Oscar and knocked out his mouthpiece. I said, wait a minute. I think that was wrong. I thought it was Oscar who hit Shane Mosley. The instant replay proved me right and him wrong. So you're there watching a fight. You know, you're not seeing everything that goes on.
But, Doc, see, this is what I'm saying, the first part of what Doc said. You know, oh, I don't understand why it was, you know, such a big deal, because you had so many controversies. My thing is I think boxing has to begin somewhere. And maybe this is the beginning of them seeing, like Teddy Atlas said on Friday Night Fights the other night, you know what? It has to change. Because this is the reason why fans are upset about what happens in boxing. And, you know, maybe this is something positive, you know, that's going to happen in boxing. You know, and now maybe some changes will be made. You know, I don't want to mention the other sport that everybody's starting to watch instead of boxing. You know, but we all know that it is true and it is happening.
Friday night, I thought Delvin Rodriguez beat Wallach. Mm-hmm. I thought he beat him.
Mm-hmm.
And here Wallach looked like Haseem Rahman, swollen all over his face. Mm-hmm. The referee almost, Steve Smogel, almost stopped it in the eighth. And Delvin gave him a battering. I mean, he hit him.
That's a sad story for Delvin, because he's been a boxer who's dealt with so many bad decisions for so long, you know?
Here's a thought, gang. We're going to take a break. After the thought. Hold on, Dusty. We'll come back to the break.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Here's a thought, Dusty. Could they have been told what to do? Hold that thought. I'll be right back.
What?
I mean, could they have been told what to do?
Boy, do I have an article for you.
Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
All day, all night, all the time. BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul.
Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth on the Blake Radio Network. Rainbow Soul is the channel. Sports in Depth is the show. Lady A and Dusty are here as a part of it. I'm going to catch a little Rooney. And we're still talking about the waiting for Harvey Foreman to join us momentarily, talking about the Paul Williams controversy fight last week. And Dusty, okay, we're going to start with you.
Wow, you just triggered
something,
man.
There's a possibility that the guys say, hey, you know, Paul Williams, the marquee guy, kind of, you know, could they have been told that, Dusty?
Let me give you a little tidbit that I apologize profusely for not remembering the fight, but you triggered something. Oh, God, I forgot the fight, which one fight it was, where it was revealed that the promoters hired the judges. And was a $1,400 package for each judge after a certain fight. And
I heard about that fight, too. I can't remember the name.
And that fight was controversial.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me that if a judge wants to make his pad or make his money, he's under the promotional or control of the promoter. Now, leaning back to two or three weeks ago when I felt that Lucas Matisse beat Devin Alexander, and Devin Alexander got the fight, well, that was a Don King promotion. Now, were these judges hired by Don King? Who the heck knows? But the fact of the matter is that, yes, there was a controversy of who hires the judges? Do they come out of the commission's office, or are they hired by the promoter?
I found out that Dan Goosen, I don't know if it was Dan Goosen, or it's one of the Goosens that promotes Williams, actually lost his mind. Did you hear about that? He lost his mind when he found out that Roy Jones, Max Kellerman, and HBO had said what they had said about Paul Williams retiring. And he was very upset that they made comments about him in the while the fight was going on when he was getting hit as hard as he was getting hit and were telling saying that he should retire. So I forget where it was. I think it was in fight. I forget where it was exactly.
Back up. Paul Williams told me at the press conference. Now, Dan, maybe he was unaware of this.
Hold on. Let me clarify, Doc. What Dan Goosen was upset about was the fact that while the fight was going on.
The fight was progressing, yes,
and
I
he was
that.
Taking hits, okay, mm-hmm. while he kept getting hit. That, mm-hmm. okay, they kept reiterating the fact that he really needs to retire
exactly.
while he was getting hit. However, absolutely. Okay, however, this just adds a little more tidbit into what Dusty's talking about. It bears a little question like, okay, I understand that, but, you know, he was more upset, I think, because obviously he's his promoter.
That's a deal ticket.
Yeah, right. So he was upset about that. However, it just brings a little more to the table as far as, you know, hey, how much power these promoters really have?
Let's back up. Bum, bum, bum. First of all, he can get upset if he wants. And I mean, they can say what they want. I mean, Williams has – it was rumored before this fight that Williams said he's going to have a couple more fights. At the press conference, I talked to him, and he told me that, yeah, he's looking for one or two more fights, and he's gone. He's made enough money, he's done well, and he feels that First of all, Williams has said he's gone. I've made enough money, I'm gone, you know, I'm tired of going up and down in weight. Guys not fighting me, you know, the main guys are not fighting me, so I'm looking to book. Now, Goosen can get up all he wants. I mean, on the other hand, these guys can say what they want to say. What's Dan's? I mean, it's not like he wasn't hitting them. So, I mean, what can he be so upset about?
I remember the whole story, Lady A and Doc. Mm-hmm. First of all, philosophically, Kellerman said, and I do believe this is true, because I believe in it. If you start talking about retirement, that means you're already retired.
Yes, that was in the middle. Of commentary.
Now,
correct.
The reason why he talked about retirement was because he had saved his money. He's not a party dude.
Right.
He saved his money, got into real estate. He had become super multiple rich.
Right.
And he wanted to save himself to spend more time by the time he's 30 with his family and bask in his wealth in real estate. And he didn't spend his money. He's a down home country kid from Georgia. That's what it was.
But I just found the article here. It's from USA Today.
Right. And Dan Goosen is going to get pissed off because his male ticket, who's become a punching bag in the gym, is going to retire to save his senses and have the rest of his life for his family. Well, Dan Goosen should then put on the gloves and go out there and get slapped. Because, hey, like I told you, Doc, I don't know if you heard it, Lady A, it's the promoter has one handicap. He gets a hernia carrying the money to the bank. But the fighter is the one that goes out there with the concussion and the bleeding nose. So
there's two schools of thought here. First of all, you heard this, so we don't know how true that is because you know you can't believe what you hear and you can't believe what you read either. So we don't know how true all this can be. On the other hand, it wasn't
this was an interview.
It wasn't
the outcome of an interview.
You have an interview?
There was an outcome of an interview with Max Kellerman and Paul Williams.
Dusty. Based on what I think, because I'm reading it right now. USA Today had it, and Goosen, it's just basically, I have it right here, word for word. It's just Goosen was upset after the eighth round that HBO announces Max Kellerman and Roy Jones Jr. suggested that Williams should retire. What was Max doing suggesting that Paul retire while the fight's still going on? Goosen said, and Roy Jones doing the same thing. Let's face it, it was a tough fight and I think a hard one to score in a lot of ways. On rounds 1 through 6, I thought Laura won the first one and I gave Paul the next 5 rounds. That's what he said.
Oh, Jesus.
Well, you know, what's the difference if he says it before the fight, during the fight, That's, I mean, what's the big difference?
Exactly, exactly.
Well, I mean, you know, what's the big difference?
And by the way, Dan Goosen? I'm sorry, was Dan Goosen? Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, I mean, what's the big difference? I mean, mm-hmm. I mean, they can say it when they want to say it. 2 and 2 is 4. Whether you say it 5 o'clock at night or 8 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
And the bottom
line is, regardless of
what they said, the guy won the fight. So, what's the gripe?
Right.
What's the gripe?
Right.
My goodness, and then, you know,
I mean, maybe he felt it was going to bring negative light to his fighter. Maybe he thought it was going to bring a negative light to his fighter for future fights. I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe that was it.
What negative light can it bring? I mean, how many guys have unretired? I mean, you know, Ray Leonard's middle name should be Sugar Ray, unretired Leonard. You know, I mean, I read an article today, and we're going to talk about Jack Johnson in a minute, too. Jack Johnson wanted to get out of prison early. You know, he put him for the pardon because, you know, they locked him up on that bullcrap Mann Act. Okay.
He still hasn't been pardoned, by the way.
It's an amazing thing, you know, that they still wouldn't, you know, pardon this black guy. And one of the things is he wanted to get out to go to the Jack Dempsey was fighting, and he wanted to be live at that fight. And even when he got out of prison, he wanted to fight Dempsey. But Dempsey...
The winner.
Let me go to the article. It's a great story. And this is the Afro Times, the Daily, the Weekly from the Daily Challenge. And let's go back, okay? Johnson had applied to get out, but Johnson's efforts were for naught, and he was still in prison when Jack Dempsey knocked out George Carpenter at 116 of the fourth round in front of 80,000 fans on July 2nd. One week later, Johnson, 43, walked out of prison and told reporters he wanted to challenge Dempsey for the heavyweight title, brushing aside Dempsey's vow to fight only white boxers. It doesn't make any difference what Dempsey says about drawing the color line. The public wants Dempsey whipped, Johnson told reporters after his release, and the public knows I am the one to do it. But Johnson, who died in 1946, never got his shot at Dempsey. But the thing that is sad and touching here was, first of all, this man was put in prison behind first-class bullcrap and racism. Okay, during his 10 months in prison, Johnson sought parole, filed an application with the president seeking clemency, and wrote letters to the attorney general seeking early release. Now, there was some thought about letting him go by the attorney general, but he got some letters. What happened, they first targeted his relationship with Lucille Cameron, who later became his wife, but she refused to cooperate. They then turned to Johnson's former mistress, a prostitute named Betty Scriber, to testify that Johnson had paid her train fare from Pittsburgh to Chicago for more purposes. Mm-hmm. An all-right jury convicted Johnson in 1913. He skipped bail, fled the country, but in 1920, Johnson agreed to return and serve his sentence. Okay? There was some talk about him being pardoned, but a handwritten letter dated June 20th, 1901, with a copy of an AP story attached to the Attorney General. Would you insult the women of the U.S. by pardoning this man? Do you know his crimes against white women? Why this clemency towards this despoiler of homes? Disgusting. It was signed by three white ladies with the word ladies underlined five times. Why pardon the Negro Johnson, who should have 50 years in prison for the crimes against white women? Asked Mrs. Tilly Smith in a handwritten letter. I voted Republican ticket for the first time last year, March. But not anymore if white women are not respected. Okay? Still, some wrote to Attorney General's support of Lisa Johnson. On June 25th, Daughtry received a petition from a group of people claiming to represent several hundreds of others asking that Johnson's sentence be commuted, and a couple of others expressed support as well. And in January that year, parole board had recommended approving Johnson's application for parole, but the Democratic Attorney General, A. Mitchell Palmer, denied it. Soon after Johnson filed an application for executive clemency, which the president, it was dated February 19, 1921, when Democratic Woodrow Wilson was president, but not received at the pardon office until March 28, 1921, by the time Warren G. Harding became president. And the bottom line is, you know, Johnson has still to be pardoned. And you know what the funny thing about that was, too, gang, was that the Mann Act, okay,
the judge
that presided over that, was none other than Keyshaw Mountain Landis, who was the same guy that kept blacks out of baseball, and he was sort of a go-between for Johnson. Like, he was the guy, from what I heard, was getting the white women for him.
Let me ask you guys this
Jack
question.
He was Jack Johnson's hangout buddy. He drank in Jackson's club. He traveled with Jackson with all those women. went back and forth. Jackson got him women, and he got Jackson women. And this is the very first dude. I'm telling you, man.
Hey, bless you. So he hung out with him, and then he got him hung.
That's right.
let me ask you guys this question. You said this was 1921?
Yeah.
You got to read the book.
No, wait. So I want to ask you guys a question. This was after the bare knuckle era, right?
Oh yeah, bare knuckles was in the 1880s, 1890s. And these guys had a pillow glove. But you got to read the book called Unforgivable Blackness. That's the Bible of Jack Johnson. If I read it once, I read it twice and three times. That in detail, it broke down page by page by page by page what they did to this man.
What's the name of the book?
Unforgivable Blackness.
All right. And you know I'm going to buy it, right? I'm going to quiz you on that. I'm going to quiz you later.
they had a special on HBO, too. But I bought the book.
Oh, yeah. I saw that.
And it was a tremendous book. You could not get any other. You could write anything else, but that's the Bible on Jack Johnson. You see, and that's basically how you get the true story from A to Z of what happened to this man. And the fact that the great Jack Dempsey got away with the color line. He wouldn't fight him, and he wouldn't fight Harry Wills.
So how was he considered great if he didn't fight all the fighters that he was supposed to?
The white structure. He wouldn't fight Harry Wills. And you know what happened with Harry Wills? Harry Wills was called the uncrowned heavyweight champ of the world. They created that garbage because he beat everybody else except Jack Johnson, who was running away from him. Harry, remember his name, Harry Wills.
That's the history.
But what I'm saying to you is, yes, nowadays, reporters have the right to say and feel based on interviews and what transpired. I mean, this man, like I said, the promoter's not getting hurt. It's the fighters getting bombed and killed, and his brains are rattled. I mean, come on. I mean, does Paul Williams remember what happened last week, or is he losing his memory? They just did something for Muhammad Ali. The man, that's a result of the vicious head punches he took in the ring. You know, and that's sad. And that's sad. You know, so but the fact of the matter is that it's the promoters today, and I'm beginning to feel, have a more free hand and more control, even, I feel, over the boxing commissions. Mm. And the boxing commissions, to me, nowadays have become lame duck.
Right.
And they become a yes agency for the tight, powerful, politically connected promoters. And they don't want to reverse back to the fact that they have control. And this is sad. When this article came out about promoters hiring the judges, whoa, man, does that sound
you know, the thing about that, Dusty, is that's just probably a tip of the iceberg of situations that we finally heard about this sort of thing.
Right.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
I mean, this is something that just didn't happen. You know, but it's just a tip of the iceberg. You know?
Right. And there was a hint, unfortunately, that also the referee was approved and or disapproved by the promoter.
Well, come on, Dusty. This can't be shocking when we realize that decades ago the underworld ran boxing. Can't be shocking.
Doc, I'm not shocked. Right. I mean, I was right in there.
No, I'm talking about those who listen. I mean, this can't be shocking. When you realize that, I mean, what they told Jake LaMotta, don't care how many Ray Roberts you beat, you don't play ball with us, and you don't get no title shot. I remember Don Johnson. I've read stories of other guys were told what they had to do. So, I mean, this sort of thing. I remember Doc Stanley Sports and Depth on the Blake Radio Network. Rainbow Soul is a channel. Sports and Depth is a show. And it's a Sunday evening. Lady A and Destino Baby Lewis waiting for Harvey Farmer to join us. I thought he joined us at 9, so maybe it's 9:30. Listen, I remember when Don King first got into boxing. And I remember at a country club, Sonny Werblin, the great Sonny Werblin, and he had taken over Madison Square Garden boxing. And I remember Jerry Corey being interviewed. And Jerry Corey said the same thing that moments later as I passed another room hearing Richard Jacchetti. And they said, Don King is the first guy in boxing, okay, that ever promised me X amount of dollars, and I got it. Now, the great Panamanian boxing photographer, Arthur LaConte, told me a story that after King's initial couple of years in boxing, the powers that be called Don in and said, Don, what are you doing? Well, it don't work, Mrs. Don. You don't promise Destino $30,000 and give him $30,000. You don't tell Thug he's got a title shot after winning this fight and give him a title shot. It don't work that way, Don. Destino gets $20,000. Doc still gets another two fights with his title shot. That's not the way it works. So, you know, credibility and you're doing the right thing ain't ever been the foundation of this game, Dusty.
Right. Absolutely. The word corruption and underhandedness and game, you know, and I'm going to tell you, I'm a true-to-life, bonafide, card-carrying victim of this whole corrupt situation, man.
See, that's why he's so adamant, guys. That's why he's so adamant. He's been a victim.
That's right.
I have a bitter
pill to swallow, man. How many times I've signed five fights, and all of a sudden, at the last minute, somebody else got the fight? I mean, I sat there, and, oh, here's the ticket, kid. Go see the fight, you know. Hey, wait a minute. This guy pulled out on me. I mean, and he's fighting somebody else and getting killed? Oh, well, we couldn't get to you at the last minute. That's the same sing song. Oh, the guy didn't want to fight you because you have such a great amateur record. You know, you buy into that, but then you realize, hey, wait a minute, man. It's not working. I mean, the dude's is fighting and making money, and I'm not making a dime. So, you know, the whole control. I mean, you know, I'm not going to name them, but you know how many organized crime dudes were in Stillman's managing fighters that I knew from the headlines? I said, ooh, they're so-and-so. I said, ooh, they're so-and-so. I said, ooh, a rogue's gallery. Oh, high echelon dudes with the big hats and double breasted coats and I said, oh my lord, look who's here! Oh my lord, look who's here! Those guys ran boxing. I mean, they may be out of it now. I don't know, but still, now you got the slick, high tech corporate executive promoter. You know, the guy who managed Rocky Marciano, which is another story. That I will take a lot of time to explain was a guy named Al.
Tell us a little bit about the story. Tell us about it.
Okay. Rocky Marciano was in Brockton. He was a bum guy. He got beaten by Coley Wallace in the amateurs. He wanted to be heavyweight champ. Brockton was a dead end town, so he goes out there and fights four or five fights in Brockton. You know. Score four knockouts or five knockouts, whatever. They said, let's go to New York because I know his pal was named Joey Colombo. Let's go to New York because I know that's where the big guys are. They went to Stillman's, and Stillman's said, well, we don't know anybody, but there's a guy named Al Wild who's looking to manage a heavyweight. This is his entry, you know, but he's well-connected. That's the guy that made Marciano what he is today. And the funny thing about it is that he kept talking about Marciano's record of five knockouts and this, that, and the other, but actually the five knockouts were his barroom bro buddies who changed his name every five times to get a record to go into New York.
Get out of here!
No, it's true.
Wow!
Look at the story.
Let me stop you for a second, Dusty. Hold on.
Yeah.
You see, Doc? Yeah. That's why you have to appreciate your panel. You see that? Did you hear the story so far?
Listen, I told you. I have the best panel in the world. Now, listen.
I just want to reiterate. I heard a wow in the background. That wow had to be from you.
Listen. Do not mention my name the rest of this show. You know, wrong people may hear this. We may not see this. Do not mention. Hey, right now, just call. Just say host. Don't say Doc Stanley. The rest of the show. Just say host.
Okay.
So when this came out. When this came out, Al Wild, with a powerful connection, had it nullified and turned everything around to solidify the fact that it was five genuine opponents. And yes, Ali Colombo was not going to fight in Boston anymore, but he got his permit to work Marciano's corner.
Wow.
He got a trainer's corner. And what happens? Al Wild, after, you know, when you go to the commission's office,
mm-hmm.
You have to sign a contract. You have to swear to your honesty and your above board and the whole nine yards.
Mm-hmm.
That's the commission's contract that is approved by the commission, and they know what goes on. What happens?
Right.
Al Wild, being a corporate slick dude, him and Rocky Marciano signed a side contract, which nobody knew.
Really?
And the side contract was that Al Wild would get 50% of all of Rocky Marciano's purses. Whereas when you go
50%?
To the commission, listen. Whereas when you go to the commission, you get 66 and two-thirds for the fighter and 33 and a third for the manager and the trainers. But our Wild, his sub little contract between Marciano and him was 50%. Now, why did they do that? Because out of the 50% from Al Wild, which was not a legal contract, it was a side contract, he would pay for all expenses, the training, the sparring partners, this, that, and the other. And the other 50% would go to Marciano. But in the long run...
He was getting 50%, Dusty?
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money. But 50%? Al Wild took all of all the expenses. But the fact of the matter is that it was found out later that Al Wild 50% was 55%.
So, God, he had even more.
Yeah, it was even more. But Marciano was one guy, down-home country dude, who was making so much money that he didn't complain.
It didn't matter.
To him.
It didn't
this
matter.
A,
hey,
yeah,
listen, something from nothing is nothing, and something from something is a whole lot more than nothing.
Exactly. So this is what I'm trying to tell you, that is it corrupt? Hey, if it's happening today, I don't know. But I go back to the history of what I saw, I witnessed, I read, and I saw, and I said, my God, you know. So to have you, to discuss this with you guys about how promoters have control of the selection of the referees and the judges, God knows. And where is the stand on the squeaky clean boxing commission in every state?
Was there a time where they told you had to hold back, or you better kind of, you know, did that ever happen to you, Dusty?
In the gym, it says you can't look too good in the gym because promoters and then are not going to give you a fight against their fighters.
Oh, yeah, you're doing too much, you mean, right, Dusty?
Right, I'm doing too much. I'm looking too sharp. You're scaring away opponents.
Right.
But the stupidity here, you're an athlete. When you're training in the gym, you're training like if you're fighting outside.
Right, so you have to give your all in the gym so you'll be prepared for whatever comes your way.
Exactly. If you're sparring in the gym, you're kicking ass, man.
But let me ask you this. Let me ask you this, Dusty.
Yeah.
You know, when you look at Erislandi, right, he had over 200 amateur fights.
Right.
And when you're fighting the amateurs, you got to fight whatever's in front of you. You don't get to pick and choose. You don't get to pick and choose who you want to fight.
Right. King Kong in front of you, your weight division, you want to win that tournament, you got to fight him.
Right.
Whoever
so do you think that the amateurs, before we were talking about the judging and what, do you think that would prepare judges better, or do you think they should still just see pro fights, you know, to make them sharp training?
Judges. Hold on. Lady, there's two schools of thought here. Fighting the amateurs is a whole lot different than fighting the pros.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Dusty, I want you to reiterate on that. I mean, it's a whole different game, isn't it, Dusty, amateur pros?
It's a whole different game, but you see...
The reason why I brought that up is because you said that before, and it's like, is that really the best stepping stone to go right to the pros? Are there guys just catapult themselves right into the pros and they're successful?
Very seldom.
You're talking about fighters?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
Dusty, you
talked about something a minute ago that Mark Whelan told me, and I think it would have really bothered you. You know, Mark said after leaving the amateurs, getting to the pros was no longer fun. He said because now, you know, you're with Top Rank, I'm with Don King, he's with Main Event. We can't hang out anymore. You know what I mean? We can't associate him. We can't be friends anymore because you got King as your promoter, he's got amateurs. He said, you know, it took the fun out of the game. And I think if you saw Mark as a pro and amateur, you saw the difference in him as a fighter. And he said it just took something out of it. It wasn't fun anymore. And any venue, Dusty, I mean, you still got to enjoy and like what you're doing.
Well, you see, Doc, that may have applied to Mark Greenland. It did not apply to me.
Okay.
Guys that I knew, grew up with, who were promoted by other guys. We see each other. Hey, how you doing? What's happening? We hang out. To me, it's a matter of perception. It's a matter of an individual by an individual. It wasn't a game anymore. Once you got your license, because now you were a pro, You were on your own. And you were trying to make some money. You were trying to dance that ranking and become a contender and fight for money. I mean, this is not medals and trophies and little watch bands and a little banner
okay,
that say you
Dusty,
won.
Could you have saw this differently than Breland because of your Hispanic background?
Oh my God! You just stomped him.
Is
that possible, Dusty?
I mean, could
you have saw this differently than Mark because of your Latin background? I mean, you know, you've seen it from a different perspective.
Okay, I see what you mean. The way Mark mm-hmm. Breland felt when he turned pro, as opposed to when I turned pro.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't think so. In fact, I'm going to tell you something. Mm-hmm. Juan Comare, who's now dead, he was a transit cop like you, Doc. Mm-hmm. A dear friend of mine, we grew up together. He was from Panama. We grew up together. Juan Comare, if he hit me in my body, he would kill me for 3 weeks. But
really?
He was stable mate. No, he was that strong. And if I...
What weight was he?
We were from 35, we were welterweights. And in the amateurs. Okay, now, if I boxed with Juan Comare, man, there was nobody in hell is going to beat me in any competition. And or if I boxed with Juan, you know, there's no way that anybody can outspeed Juan because I was faster than Juan.
Okay.
Now, so what happens? Juan went to a different camp when he turned pro. I went to a different camp. I should have turned pro with Juan, and I'm telling you more than I should.
So Dusty, in other words, Juan went with Cain, and you went with Abel?
Yeah, exactly. And what happened was that we both should have been stablemates, but it didn't happen. So what happens? The anger of the promoters or the owners of these bodies, because, you know, it's called stable, like horses. I'm in the same stable as Miguel Cotto. I'm in the same stable as Floyd Mayweather. We're all stable mates. We're like horses, okay? Mm-hmm. And this is probably what Mark Green was talking about. Different stables so you don't mix with the other horses. And what happens is that as I was going along, Juan Pomari was going along. We were both undefeated. What happens, they wanted to match, and I never thought about it. Because Juan and I were friends, we're still brothers. Same weight, but there was a deal somewhere that never came through, thank God for Juan, because I knew I could beat him, to match us up, because I had gone to the different stable and I didn't go with Juan.
Really?
You see your point? So they were looking for Juan to battle, to destroy me. That's the dirtiness of
really?
The game.
Really, Dusty? Wow.
I'm telling you things that I've never said. Yeah, I'm revealing too much already. But
keep talking. Don't stop now.
But Juan knew it, and I knew it. I said, you know, you and I are supposed to be matched to fight. You know, to me, I said, you want to fight me? I said, no. I said, look, it doesn't make sense. We're only six rounders, man. We're only preliminary guys. I think if we get to a 10-rounder or a championship fight, that's a different story. But I don't want to fight you any more than you want to fight me. And that was right. That was the deal. Juan and I knew that if we ever fight, it would be in something meaningful. I had to eliminate him to get a title shot. You better believe it, man. I go in with all my claws, and I go in there with all my sledgehammers, and I'm going to be Juan, man. And Juan is going to do the same thing to me. But it had a meaning. It was a meaningful fight. A preliminary to destroy me because Juan was stronger than me and I didn't go to the right camp. That's the dirty deal that happens in those days. And what is happening today, I don't know. I do know that when I turned pro, my first pro debut, I fought a guy named, Mike Campbell. I never forget Mike Campbell. Why? Goes, hey, I'm happy. I got my first pro fight and all that. I'm happy. But Mike Campbell, man, had a record of 7-1 and 4 knockouts, man.
Really?
I'm not supposed to fight a guy. Yeah. I'm not supposed to fight a guy like that.
Why'd they give you that guy?
No,
why'd they give you him?
Right. Why? Because they knew that coming from an amateur background, I had enough experience in amateur background.
That's why I said that to you, you see?
I could beat Mike Campbell, and I knocked him out. in the third round in my first
yeah.
pro debut. But the fact of the matter is that Mike Campbell almost killed me.
That's you knocked him out, but he almost killed you?
He almost killed me because this is my first pro debut. I had never been hit with punches of a pro, an experienced pro, when I fought Mike Campbell. It wasn't like John Doe making his pro debut and DeStinio Lawyers Jr. also making his pro debut.
Yeah, yeah, okay, okay.
Okay? It was Mike Campbell, 7-1 in 4 knockouts, man.
But see, Dusty, that's why I said what I said, because in the amateurs, you already had the mindset to fight whoever was in front of you. The same thing with the fight with Williams and Rislandi Laura.
Exactly.
Which is,
exactly.
I have the mindset, I'm going to beat whoever they put in front of me.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, well, that has to be the mindset in general. I mean,
because, you know, you have the experience and you're used to fighting, you know, whoever. In other words, you're not handpicking your opponents.
Yeah, but the fact of the matter, the reason why I was matched, given Mike Campbell, because they knew that I could beat him, and they wanted to hurt him because he had flagged out on quite a few fights, and he owed a promoter some money.
Right.
Well, and whether he paid him or they paid money on him, he never paid him. I mean, he had a bad record, and but he had a good fighting record. So what happens towards the end of the first round? I got hit with a right hand in my left eye. And I said, oh, my God, I saw stars. I said, well, it's okay. My eye closed. I couldn't see.
Right.
I had to kind of see it with my right eye. I was fighting what is called refrigerator style. I had to go forward, shortening my reach.
Right.
To be able to see my camera. Fortunately,
Hold on, Dusty. They call it refrigerator style?
Yeah, when you fight a guy broadside, you don't go. See, when you fight at an angle. Never give the fighter, your opponent,
a clean shot.
Target.
Right.
Right? Uh-huh. You fight at an angle, and your arm, which is your jab, is closer to your opponent, and you extend and has more distance. But when you fight refrigerator, squared, walking in both feet, you shorten your punches. You shorten your arms. You shorten the distance. But I had to do that out of desperation because I couldn't see.
Right.
Now, where did you learn that this was all stuff you learned in the gym?
Yeah, you learned all this.
You know, this is amazing, and when we talked about this, and this is Doc Stanley Sports and Death on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul of the channel, Sports and Death is the show. One more time, Doc Stanley Sports and Death on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul of the channel, Sports and Death is the show. If you listen to the first part of this show, we talked about the redundance. The ignorance, the refusal, A, B, C, and D, all of the above, of Paul Williams to, well, not that he couldn't make the judge, because he can't. Now, you know, as we listen to DeStinio, and we don't always listen to him, but real side, we listen to DeStinio, here's a guy who learned his, these are things that were automatically instilled and done in the game, and that's why baseball players are not as good as yesteryear. You know, they don't do infield outfield practice. And you just told us things here that is part of 101 becoming a fighter. And this, and you're saying, Dusty, because of Gil Clancy and Howie Alvarez, I can't think of the other, Sid Martin.
No, Sid
because
Martin
of these guys
and
who knew
and
the
Frank
craft.
Rodriguez.
These are automatic things, but these are the things, and Howard Wesley should be joining us soon, that the guys today, and I mean, this is crazy, man. I mean, right, Doc Stanley, you can't touch my panel. You can't touch
and you
my
know what?
Crew.
And you know what, Doc? I mean, it's evident based on what, I mean, you still have some guys that were from yesteryear that are still around and are bringing it to the forefront, like Emmanuel Stewart saying what he said. These kids are not developing the fundamentals that they need.
Exactly. And they're not thinking. They're not thinking in that ring because.
Well, but Dusty, let's back up. If it's not about thinking, what you've been taught, it's instinct. You react automatically. You don't have to think about it
because
your body and the mind is going to do it automatically.
Because you have muscle memory,
Dusty?
Doc, it's muscle memory, and you.
Great line.
It's you got to understand one thing. Not only the training, the discipline, but you also you see. This is a funny thing here. You see a fighter come out of the dressing room. You see his entourage, Team Koto, and six guys and seven guys. But when that bell rings, there's only one Koto in the ring, man. And when that Koto in the ring goes in there, he has to implement the plans that he worked out in training camp, and then and or improvise whether that plan is not working.
That's what I just said. Adjusting.
Exactly.
The adjustment.
That's
making the adjustments necessary. That's right.
Exactly. And that's why I told you, this is the first time I used it on the radio,
mm-hmm.
I had to fight this guy refrigerator style because I couldn't see out of an angle. The closest eye to my opponent was my left eye, which was already closed.
Mm-hmm.
You see, so I said, oh, man, I got to turn around. I got to fight this guy and shorten my hands. But what happens was that as a gutsy or crazy, insane or whatever you want to call me, I got to this guy, dude, and when I knew I had his body with me, I pounded the crap out of him. I beat him. I pounded his arms. I pounded his head. I threw uppercuts at us. And then one time, I said, out of desperation, I threw a hook and staggered him and dropped him. I said, oh, thank God. Don't get up. Please don't get up. I can't see you. I'm not trying to be funny, but it's the truth. I looked at him. He hit the canvas on his knees. And he sort of bowled over. I said, don't get up. Don't get up because I'm going to have to, please. I can't see. And that was towards the end of the second round. So being the freaking bell rang, I said, oh, my Lord, I got to come. I got to kill this guy in the third round. I got to. It was a desperation move. He was still staggering. Maybe he was tired from my body shots. I don't know. And he sort of stumbled outside in that third round. I said, I got you. And I think I did a Rocky Graziano, pinned him on the ropes with one hand, and bam, 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 and it hit him nonstop with the referee. Waved it off. I said, thank God. I couldn't see. That was somewhere around a minute and a half of the third round. I said, oh, thank God, but I couldn't see.
Hang on a minute, gang. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Destino Lois Lady A Show with this special guest, Doc Stanley. And we'll be back with the press.
All day, all night, all the time, BlakeRadio.com, music for your mind, body, and soul.
Doc Stanley, Sports and Death on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Solar Channel, Sports and Death of the Show. Harvey Farmer's having some problem calling in, but you can see the panel is moving along. We're waiting for Harold Weston to join us and try to get Muscle in his last half hour. Calm down. It's so amazing. And Lady A, we wanted just once again, and you brought him by subject, when you came through the other night and broke it, it was heard here first on Sports and Death and on Blake Radio Rainbow Soul. About the suspension of the judges. I mean, the world heard that here first, as they did about the Bin Laden situation. And tonight, man, fighting refrigerator, man, this is something else. But then again, this is the panel. This is my crew. You can't touch them. They're the best, not only in the world, but that ever has been. Gentlemen and ladies, let's talk for a minute. Forthcoming fight, as we find out now, Sergio Martinez is going to be having a press conference this week. Let me go to the thing. And well, now what we found out now, with that being the situation, we're going to have major fights the last 4 months of the year. September is the Pretty Boy.
I'm looking at my calendar. It's like you got a whole bunch. You got Khan Judah right on the 28th, right?
I'm just talking about as we move toward the fall. Okay, Khan Judah is coming up. This
Yeah, Khan Judah. You got Agbeko and Mahrez on the 13th.
The Super Bantamweight.
That's going to be crazy. You got Maidana Guerrero on the 27th.
Yeah, that's going to be a war.
Keep going.
Then
keep
you
going,
got you got September 10th. You got Klitschko and Adamek. You got Mayweather Ortiz on the 17th of September.
Now that's the other brother. That fight's going to be overseas again too. Correct?
Yeah. Then you got Mayweather Ortiz on the 17th of September. And October 1st, you got Martinez Barker against Darren Barker. Then you on the 15th of October, you got Hopkins versus Dawson.
Right.
And the location still hasn't been announced on that. And then you got Frotch and Ward on the 29th of October.
Absolutely.
And I don't know of any November fights yet. Do you, Dusty? I haven't seen
it. No, we got Pacquiao in November.
December 3rd is Margarito and
but hold up. We forgot Pacquiao. He's fighting in November, too. Okay.
Yeah. What is that, the 19th? I think it's the 19th or the 12th.
The 19th
You tell us.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Believe it or not, I don't know where that's going to fight's going to be. I think it's the MGM, though.
It's got to be in Vegas. I mean, Aaron's got to get that locked up.
Marquez and Pacquiao is is Vegas.
Vegas.
I don't think they're going
Vegas,
to Texas Stadium.
Yeah.
And then December, we got Margarito and Cotto. So, we, you know, this is what I said two or three shows ago, that forget the heavyweights, man.
That's nothing worse.
What heavyweights? What heavyweights?
Exactly.
Right. Take it out of your vocabulary.
Okay, listen,
exactly.
Let's do this. The major ones. We've got, we'll start with ladies first, Lady A. We've got the Pacquiao and Marquez fight. Who are you taking in that one?
You know what? I got to tell you, I like Marquez.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's Dusty?
Well, you know, let me tell you something.
I like Marquez.
Let me tell you something. I like Marquez with reservation. Mm. Why? Because when he fought Pacquiao, it was 6-7 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
When I thought he beat him.
I know,
and,
I did too.
Right. And Marquez through the years has been a warrior. He destroyed Juan Diaz.
He's taking a lot of beatings too.
That's the key, Lady A. When Casillas knocked him down with that left hook, I thought he was dead.
Yeah, but
when
you know what? I think, I don't know, Dusty, because you know what, though? I look at it from the other standpoint. He's the one guy that has question for Pacquiao. I'm sorry.
Pacquiao, he
right.
He has
yeah, but Dusty, but this fight is going to be, he's got to come up and wait again to this fight, right?
He has to come in. No, I think it's a.
Are they fighting in catchweight?
It's a 44-pound contract. It's a 44-pound. It's a super middleweight.
They're fighting a catchweight, right?
Dusty,
a catchweight of 44 pounds.
How long can Pacquiao keep doing this, Dusty? How long can he keep doing this catchweight stuff?
Not really. But you see, the fact of the matter is that if you look at it, the catchweight is favoring Pacquiao, not the other fighter. You see? Marquez fought Mayweather, catchweight. But Marquez was a 35-pounder who just grew into 35 from 26 and had to come up to 44 pounds, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And when he fought Mayweather, Mayweather was 153.5 pounds.
Yeah, but okay, Dusty, he's the one guy that's gotten to him before, and I think that this time around he might be able to pull it off.
He might be able to pull it off, but I'm concerned about the fact that
this is what I need to know. So, you're picking him to win, too? You're picking him to win, too?
Mayweather knocked him down, and Marquez took a 9 count. He just beat the count.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And Casillas knocked him down, too, flat on his back. So this is what I'm afraid of. Does he have the sustaining or staying power of a Pacquiao? That's all. You see?
Even though
I agree with Lady A that he might be able to pull it out.
You know, Dusty, you get my vote for mayor, okay? You know, yours is a yes with two question marks. We got two other guys joining. Harold Weston has finally joined us again.
Harold!
Calm down. And Lulu Coco is back in the house. Gentlemen, we've been out. Got a good 15 minutes left. But, Harold, congratulations on your show down there in Florida, man.
Yeah, my time is limited these days. I'm people are calling me all over, so
I'm trying to do this thing.
I want to take time right now, Harold, to say that I missed you.
There you go.
I hope y'all been reading the newspapers and hearing about it on the internet and everything about it, right?
Yes, sir, Mr. Weston. Yes,
okay, let's get it straight now.
And also, Lady A, your other boyfriend is here, the body slammer, little Coco just joined us.
What's up, Coco?
Well, thank you for that introduction, Dr. Hartano.
The body slammer, you know what I mean? Hal, I'm glad you came because otherwise I'd been stacked against the wall. The body slammer, Lady A, and Dusty. Every time Dusty says something, little Coco gives him the tag and slams it. But Harold and little Coco, we were looking at the fights coming on, and we'll start with Mel real quick. Just a quick pick. We got the big fights. We got Mayweather and Ortiz. Who do you like in that fight, Coco?
Mayweather, obviously. Mayweather, I think he still has enough left to fight his, you know, current layoffs and coming back. I think he'll get the job done. We can still look forward to hopefully someday the big one.
Okay, now, Mal, there's some reservations between Lady A and Dusty, Marquez and Pacquiao. Which way you go there, Coco?
Oh, Pacquiao again. I think we're going to have another win, another nice victory on his belt. And again, we can look forward to the big one.
Now,
hopefully,
let's
get it together, Doc, and have some type of meeting of the minds.
Maybe we'll see that fight before about 72.
Well, now, the lesson here, and then I'm going to run the hell Cotto and Margarito, I thought Margarito had the tools to beat Cotto regardless of the cheating. Who do you like in the Cotto-Margarito fight, Lil Coco?
I like Cotto in this one, Doc. I think he's going to be motivated. I think he's going to want to try to get that limp off of his record. I think he thinks that he was cheated. I think he feels the gloves were loaded. And I think he feels that that he can beat Margarito. I think he really feels that. He wants it. I think he's going to go after it.
Harold, as a promoter, as a guy who has brought so much to this game inside and outside the ring, as a former
reinvented the game again. Let's get it straight. I'm reinventing the game.
You
mustn't read the newspaper right, Mel. You didn't read the newspaper right, man.
I'm asking questions here. It's just
I know it's your show.
No. What
hey,
I said, Harold.
Did you see my coming out show? It says the change has come. Did you hear about it?
So I'm saying here, Harold. Do you think as a promoter, as a guy, do you think Margarito still should be in the game in lieu of what happened?
No, I shouldn't. I think he should not be. I think it's a sin. It's a sad sin that they're still letting it go on, and it's a lot of politics being played in this. And I think it's a darn shame that we're even thinking about Margarito still for fighting. I mean, he got caught. You know, if you're going to let him fight, get Panama Lewis back his
No, I heard that.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, what are we talking about here? I mean, it's a disgrace as we sit here now.
There's no way, shape, or form you could as a promoter and a match.
No.
Okay.
When you load up gloves, I have no sympathy for you. No sympathy. That's most,
and not only
that's
that,
the most
Doc,
criminal crime in the world of boxing. That's the most criminal crime in the world of boxing. To load up your gloves. My whole thing is about being a former fighter, knowing I fight by the rules and do by the rules, and here's a guy that's going to be corrupt and doing all the wrong things. You might as well say, let Willie Sutton be in the bank all the time, be president, and he is all right, if that's what you want to do. Don't let him send him to jail. Just let him come on back to the bank again. Let him do his work.
But, Harold, we got to look at it from another standpoint, too. I mean, it's borderline criminal. This guy could have killed him.
That's right. No,
I mean
it's all that.
You
got to
look at it from another standpoint, too.
Yeah.
The only way to look at it is the way Harold looked at it. And okay, Mel, you were bad with Coco. I mean, I know you're coming in with this, but come on, Rooney. This man should not be in boxing, Rooney.
No.
And Doc, I actually agree. And I'm saying you can't ask champions like Harold and Dusty about that. You ask a fighter like that, Doc, to a fighter, that's the lowest thing that you can do.
Right. I have no respect.
Where a fighter's concerned. You know, messing up the gloves, loading up the gloves. To a fighter, Doc, that is the lowest of the low. To any guy,
Rooney, in your sport, what equals that? What can a wrestler do that equals the same pharisee that this guy did? Is there a term or a situation that is similar in your venue to what Margarito did? Educate us.
Doc. My thing being sports entertainment is a little different. And our thing, the worst you can do is changing matters without guys having an understanding. I mean, if things are supposed to go, say, A, B, C, D, and you have them go C, D, L, M, and kind of change things up at the last minute without a certain understanding between the sports entertainers, that's the worst thing you could do. In Hollywood, they would call it changing the script. At the last minute without any, understanding
from
the director.
Give us a case where that happened, Rooney.
Jumping from the top of the turnbuckle.
A very famous case that happened, Doc. A very famous case with a former champion named Bret the Hitman Hart and a guy named Shawn Michaels, well-known Hall of Famers.
Oh, wow.
What happened was Bret was going to leave the Federation. He had took a $5 million deal with Ted Turner's WCW. And the thing is, you can't let a guy go to the other federation with your belt. So they had an understanding that, Vince McMahon wanted him to drop the belt to Shawn Michaels.
because, you know, in wrestling, you don't just go on TV and say, I'm going to another federation, I'm a volunteering the belt. You have to lose the belt. That's how our business works. You pass it on to the next. You pass it on.
Right.
And what happened was a very famous case in Montreal. I'll be brief. What happened was, Doc, that he hated Shawn Michaels' guts in real life. They hated each other. More Bret hating Shawn than Shawn hating Bret, but they disliked each other. Montreal is Bret's hometown. He said, I will lose the belt any place else in the world. Please don't make me lose it to this guy that you know I hate in my hometown.
Wow.
He said, I'll go on TV the next day, give the belt up, and then take my $5 million and move to the next federation. Vince said, you know, that's not how our business works. You have to lose the title. Make a long story short, Doc, Bret thought that they had an understanding that he would drop the belt to Shawn. I mean, that they would have, actually, it was supposed to be a draw. That it would be a draw. You know, there'd be a whole lot of commotion. And, thereby, you know, he'd go on the next day and voluntarily give up the belt. Vince secretly told the ref and Shawn Michaels, look, when you go into your favorite move with this guy, we're just going to ring the bell and take the damn belt. Because he knows that's not how wrestling works. He had convinced Bret, by the way, they did a documentary on this tremendous called Beyond the Shadows. He had convinced Bret that they had an understanding that he wouldn't have to lose to this guy, that he could voluntarily give the belt up. Well, when the time came and Bret thought that, you know, that there would be sort of a draw in this thing, what they actually did was rang the bell, awarded the belt. The referee, believe it or not, this is right out of Central Casting, the referee ran straight from the ring right outside to a wedding limousine. So they
oh, my God.
This stuff was right out of Central Casting. What happened was the ref actually had spoke to on another occasion, but Dr. Russ said, you know, he's going to be mad. What am I going to do? What am I going to do if I take the belt? He said, we're going to have a car waiting for you. Ring the damn bell and get the hell out, which is exactly what happened. Shawn put Bret in his finishing hold. As Bret was supposed to get out of it and it was going to be a draw, they rang the bell in mid-hold. Ref ran out the ring, ran right outside, drew the doors, jumped into a wooden car and was whisked away.
Wow.
By the way, Doc, what wound up happening is, you know, obviously Bret was irate because he thought they had not understanding.
Yeah, right.
And what happened was Vince McMahon was coming out of one of the offices that he was using there for that night, and he clocked him and knocked him out.
Wow.
He knocked out Vince McMahon over the whole incident.
Wow.
My goodness. Doc Stanley, Sports and Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul is the channel, Sports and Depth is the show. It's another Monday night with the crew. Harold Weston is back in town. Mel Slam Body, Little Coco has joined us in the ensuing moments. Dusty and Lady. Harold, now, what do you got going for us in boxing now? When the next card, baby?
We're looking at August 20th in Tampa. I have to call down. I'm getting ready to try to fly out of here this week and, you know, settle that deal and everything. But we're looking at the 20th in Tampa. Right now I'm working on a couple of TV deals at the same time that they want me to do and everything. They miss me, and I can see that.
We miss you too, Harold.
Yeah, I'm glad everybody understands. I told Mel a long time. I said, Mel, when I leave Madison Square Garden, it's all over. It's going to go down the drain. And sure enough, it went down the drain like it did. And so basically, what I've seen the last 25 years is a disaster of boxing that now needs a fuel of energy and knowledge to the game and bring it back to this point where it was. My show started from 4 rounds to 12 where the fights were all great from that point on. Everybody stand up with a stand ovation. Every show, every bout, 7 bouts, everybody standing ovation for all the fighters. That's how great it was. Okay.
And the whole card, all fighters had winning. Hey, who won the main event? The Russian guy?
The Russian guy. Russian guy is darn good. You better look out for him. He really can fight.
He won by decision or knockout?
Knockout. It was a slugfest for like 4 rounds. I mean, they just went like Tommy Hearns and Tommy Hearns and Hagler. Yo, God, these guys just went at it, boy. It was just a great fight.
Okay, now, this card you're going to have, is the Russian guy going to be back on that card?
No, I don't do it that way, man. I'm looking for new talent. I'm looking for new talent all the way. It's going to be this whole year. I'm dealing with the young generation. You know, I'm trying to hope that the old fighters start getting back in the gym and start training these fighters, this young generation, and bring the change to this boxing. We need a new breed to start coming out here, and not this whole simple, you know, guys that don't want to fight, picking their own fights and who they want to fight and who they don't want to fight. You know, it's nonsense. You know, my show was, I gave you a match, put the match together, and the guys took the matches, and that was the key point of it all. And I'm talking about everybody on the show had a winning record.
That's unheard of, isn't it, Harold?
Yeah. Well, this is Harold Weston. You know, we ain't playing no
more. I love this guy. I love this guy.
Harold, and we got, we'll do lights on too. Real quickly, has Bernard Hopkins stayed too long at the fair, Harold?
No, because nobody can fight. He's doing the right thing. I mean, you know, collect as much money as you can. Nobody can fight. Nobody can hurt you. Bernard has not been in one fight that somebody hurt. I mean, the only guy that really beat him up and really took a decision was for the middleweight championship was the kid from Arizona. Not Roy Jones. Jones. Him and Roy was like playing with each other.
You're talking about
Jermaine Taylor? Yeah, Jermaine Taylor. He's the only one that really hit Bernard. Out of everybody, he's the only one that really hit him. Roy Jones, if you look at him and Roy Jones fight, they both were shadow boxed. They both were scared to death of each other. When I'm talking about a fight, I'm talking about you getting nailed. Not getting
like the, you mean like the Paul Williams Lara fight?
Yeah, I mean that kind of
Harold,
fight. Yes, that
Harold,
kind of fight.
You were the guy that said right here, Doc Stanley Sports and Death on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul of the Channel Sports and Show. You know, when you said, you know, at Ray Robinson, pound for pound, the best by a lot of. Is he the pound for pound? Because you said, you know, there's some guys that Ray could afford that he didn't fight. Is Ray the best pound for pound? I've always said, in a lot of ways, you know, Ali fought the best of his era.
And
I lean toward Ali because of that, because there were guys that Ray avoided. Am I right, Harold?
Well, yeah, Ray avoided a lot of guys. And let me just say this. Ray got his marquee, his value and everything, if you look at all his fights, was nothing but white fighters.
Yep, that's what it was. That's where the money was.
Okay? If you really want to go down Ray Robinson's record, he did not fight the best black fighters out there. Hate to put it in that kind of sense, but it's true.
Let it flow, baby. Let it flow.
I'm not going to take nothing from Ray Robinson. He was a good fighter and everything, but he avoided everybody just like Ray Lennon was avoiding people. Even like Floyd Mayweather is avoiding people.
Harold,
because
was
he the best.
Was Ray Robinson
the best?
Was he the best, Harold?
He was all right.
Okay, between him and Ali, would you lean toward Ali or lean toward Ray?
I lean towards Ali. Ali fought everybody. That's the reason why him and Joe fought each other. Because when you looked at their records, there was nobody else they could fight except each other.
Mm-hmm.
They fought everybody in the division.
Mm-hmm.
There was no, when that situation started, that's how come it was the greatest fight of all time. Because of the fact that when you look at the stats, they fought everybody in the division, beat everybody. They were Olympic champions, and there was nobody standing but the two.
They were the last two men standing.
Right. Out of the whole heavyweight division ratings, they beat everybody in there. So where do you go except me and you? We got to fight each other. And that's how come it was the greatest fight of all time.
I think that's what boxing is lacking these days. Exactly
what
Howard just said.
But Lady A, it's not what boxing is. You don't have Ali and Frazier no more. Exactly, because you don't have those kind
of
guys.
Not that.
Doc Stanley Sports Enough, we're getting ready to close out here. The panel's going to stay here, and we're going to do, of course, we got to do with the lights out and the mic on, so don't nobody move. Larry Hardesty, close out for us, please.
This concludes another edition of Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. We thank you for listening and encouraging you to tell a friend about Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. You can hear that and many other great programs on the Blake Radio Network. Have a great day.
Oh, that's it. We're going to close out. Of course, the gang's here. They're chopping at the bit, so we're going to have Sports in Depth with the mic on, lights off, and just hang with us, and Larry will bring us right back. Dear Lord, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. That your will be first and foremost, and give us not so much what we want, but what we need, and we need all of you. In Jesus' name, the Lord, amen.
Welcome to Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley on the Blake Radio Network. On each and every show, Doc takes you inside the world of sports to hear from the movers, shakers, and decision makers. I know you thought there were seven wonders of the universe, where here's the eighth, Doc Stanley.
It's that second portion. Mic on, lights off. Dear Lord, thank you. All to your holy name. In Jesus' name, Lord, amen. Okay, gang, it's time for them to babble at it now. Hal's in the house. Little Coco is body slamming. He done did a couple. He got his little black tights on tonight, you know, with them pink shoes. So they're ready to rock.
You're wearing the long tights today, Doc.
The long black ones?
We're in the long black ones today, Doctor.
Hey, Rooney, we know it's you, so take the mask off, baby. Take the mask off. We know it's you. Okay, gang, we're here. Hal, you know, you're back in town. You talked about Ray Robinson. First, Hal, let's just, you know, it was kind of sickening. And you tell me the refusal of the people to recognize Ali Frazier won? Talk about that, Hal.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was just a situation where they figured that Ali and Frazier shouldn't get as much money. They didn't know the deal. I mean, that was the whole thing. They really didn't know the transition of this new era of pay-per-view. And that's what really lost Madison Square Garden.
Harold, you're telling me even now, in the 21st century, because you told me, if I'm correct, and panel, you know, we got Harold here, so I'm going to talk about, you told me the Garden didn't know back then. Are you telling me they still haven't comprehended this thing, Harold?
Well, they know it now. I mean, yeah, it's all now, but I mean, they didn't know it back then. It was a new thing. It was a new thing that nobody ever heard of. And they couldn't grasp the situation of this thing. You know, my man who had brought this to my attention, who told me about it like 7 years before that. His name?
You're talking about Ali Frazier, you mean?
Yeah, the Ali Frazier. But no, but my man who created he created the closed circuit TV.
You're not talking about the LA guy Pacheco, no? Right?
No, not Pacheco. He's the one that came in on him, but the guy that did it, oh man,
Figueroa, something like that was his name?
No, it was the white guy. He was in the music business too. All right, he'll come to me, but he
not Kirshner. Should be Kirshner?
No.
Okay, good. Good, Al.
It's a wild name, but. The thing is that he's the one that brought it to the gentleman in Los Angeles who put up the money after he explained what he can do and how it will work.
What's his first name? Lou Figueroa or something like that?
Lou Falcigno.
Okay, yeah.
Lou Falcigno.
I got it, baby.
All right, Lou Falcigno. Lou Falcigno is the one that brought it to them, and he sold it to the guys in L.A., and they put up the cash money. But Lou he put up the $5 million.
Which was a lot of money then.
Yeah, Joe got $2.5 million, and Ali got $2.5 million, and so that was a lot of money back then. Because Garden went as far as $750,000, because they were just looking at doing it from the gate. But Lou had created this thing of this closed circuit thing, where $30 million can 30 million people.
But even had it just been $700,000 was still a lot of money too, right?
It was still a lot of money, and that was the most money that Garden has ever offered to anybody for a world championship fight.
Wow!
And so that was the whole key point. And still, when it all went down, and they made the deal and they put the contract together and everything, Ali and Joe could not get out their contract. I mean, they would have to die before they got their contract. That contract was so tight, and so many lawyers was on that. That was incredible, but. The thing was, the Garden was able to move themselves in. They had to put up like $500,000 or something like that to have the site fee for the fight to be at the Garden. So that's how it did. And the Garden made, like, you know, they made close to over $1 million for the fight, which they knew they were going to sell out. Everybody knew they were going to sell out. And the highest ticket for the show was $150.
How soon did it sell out, Harold?
Oh, it was sold out within that week.
Oh, my God.
As soon as the ticket went on sale, it was gone. I mean, Frank Sinatra couldn't get in. I mean, it was sold out. But Harold Weston had two tickets.
Nah. Well, you know, and here's a funny story. James Taylor had two tickets to that fight. And the reason why James Taylor had two tickets to that fight, and once again, this is Doc Stanley Sports in Depth on the Blake Radio Network. Rainbow Soul is the channel. Sports in Depth is the show. They're here. Little Kelco in the black tights and the black mask. Lady A, that's Dino Baby Lords, Harold Weston Jr. James Taylor had two tickets to that fight because March 8th originally was a scheduled James Taylor concert. So in lieu of the fact that he wasn't going to have the concert, that's some sort of compensation, which was a hell of a compensation, but he still got the concert anyway. James Taylor had two tickets to the fight because that was originally, that Monday, was originally the day he was going to have a concert at Madison Square Garden. Gentlemen, ladies, he's here. I know Lady A is chopping at the bit. She's going to come at Harold first, and then Lou Coco with him. Don't body slam him, Coco. Don't body slam him. We've got Harold here. Welcome back. A tremendous show. Dusty's over. And Dusty, tell Harold that term you told me. Come on, refrigerator. Yeah, he was talking about that.
I'm a little before Harold Weston.
You're a whole lot before all of us. Cut it out.
Moses.
Go ahead, Dusty.
I fought Moses for the heavyweight championship.
that's why he's stunned because he hit him so hard.
Yeah. I was telling him about a fight I had, my first pro fight. The guy closed my eye with a right-hand shot, and I couldn't see with my left eye. So I had a fight, and this is an expression that I learned, how to fight a refrigerator style. He says, I never heard of that phrase. He says, refrigerator is where you fight a man broadside, both hands, you're coming at him at this, you know, you fight at an angle. But I couldn't fight at an angle because I couldn't see. So I had to fight him in order to be able to see him with my right eye. He never heard of that. I said, well, maybe Harold may have heard it, but this is how I had to fight the guy, and I was lucky enough to knock him out. But Fernando Vargas used to fight refrigerator style. That was his downfall. He used to come at you both guns. He never fought at an angle. That's why Tito Tilly got killed him. And Oscar De La Hoya killed him. These guys that fight refrigerator style cut off their defense because they could get hit easier. But in my desperation, I had to fight that way to see him, be able to see him with one eye, which was the right eye. So this is what I was telling them. He said that they never heard of refrigerator style, but I do know that was a phrase that we used to use when I was a kid, you know, when I was growing up. So that's basically what it is. So anyway, that's basically what I was saying. And I was lucky, but you know, I didn't have to. You know, I used it only for that one fight because, but I was desperate. I couldn't see. Some guys turn southpaw, and that was my temptation to turn southpaw because I'm a natural southpaw. But I have been so trained by Clancy and Sid Martin that I didn't dare turn southpaw. But I had a fight. Do a certain way to protect myself, man. Yeah, but that's basically why you see a lot of guys turn southpaw because they're hurt and they want to go and confuse the opponent. That to me was a no-show. I couldn't do that. So that's basically what it was in my day, you know. But anyway, well, that's what I was saying, you know. So, but there's and to get back to hello, to get back to what I'm saying, there's a lot of schools of thought, and I just want to lay this out about the banning for life of Margarito. And you mentioned, but everybody forgot that the real victim here in both cases was Louis Resto, who went to prison. You know, there were two crimes committed in both segments, one of which was fatal, which was a Louis Resto case. The first part of the Margarito fight with Shane Mosley, the first part of the crime was stopped in its progress, which was they caught him with his dirty tapes. And the commission, when they realized that it was illegal, they had already decided that that he was going to be suspended. They held up his purse in the whole nine yards. If, God forbid, Nassim Richardson had not seen it. I don't know where the hell the inspector was, because in the trial there was a question as to where was the inspector who should have overseen the taping. Where was he doing chasing butterflies? Well, if Nassim Richardson had not seen that, the second part of that crime would have been committed. Margarito going with loaded gloves into the ring and maybe killing and hurting and ending Shea Mosley's career. So the since the crime was caught in its progress, I think to give them their due, even though you may not agree, the commission decided you lose your license, we're holding up your purse, and then you'll have to appeal to us after the anniversary. And remember, Margarito didn't fight till after the year was over. And what's his name, Capetillo, cannot go work a corner at all. He could train like Panama Lewis did, but he can't work a corner.
Yeah, but
he
that's
hasn't
the,
been
no, but the real
yeah.
deal here is he, you know, the trainer is not the guy that should have been penalized like this. I mean, the bottom line is
the trainer
I think
should have been penalized just like the fighter Margarito. They're both in cahoots and know what the hell they were doing.
Well,
Carol, you can tell me, but the trainer couldn't
train for a while. Am I right?
He can't. Who? Panama Lewis?
Yeah, no, not Panama.
No,
not Panama. Oh. The trainer for Margarito. I mean, listen, Panama Lewis has always maintained his innocence.
He maintained
his innocence,
but he was guilty as much as Margarito. Harold knows full well that when we get our hands taped, we're facing and we know exactly.
No, I understand that, but I'm just saying that, you know, the penalties, the evidence against Panama Lewis was nowhere as large, as blatant, and obvious as it was against Margarito, and this guy's fighting again in December.
But you forget one thing, Doc, that there was a fatality. The man was...
If he's not guilty, I don't care what happened. If he's not guilty, I don't care what happened.
Was you know, he could have killed Billy Collins in Africa.
If he's innocent, he's innocent. How many times?
He's innocent, yes.
If he's innocent, he's innocent.
But the fact of the matter is that there was a fatality.
If he's guilty, he's guilty. But if he's innocent, he's innocent. And there's no way in the world his evidence would stack that heavy against him the way it was against Margarito. Let's take a quick break.
If you're acting like a left field judge, man, you got to understand that the crime of commission was enacted in the Resto case because Collins got almost murdered in that freaking ring. His career was ended, and he committed
suicide. What I'm
saying
is,
the crime here was
stopped. Evidence against Panama Lewis, if I'm wrong, Harold, help me. The evidence against Panama Lewis was not as big, not as obvious, and not as blatant.
Harold,
am I right or wrong,
Harold?
Tell me, Harold.
He reminded me of a third party. Listen, Doc, man, you got me on the platform, so let me finish what I'm saying. Harold reminded me of a third party that was just as guilty. That was Angelo Curley. I know Angelo Curley when I was a kid starting as a pro. Angelo Curley walked almost every freaking corner. He was in cahoots with Panama Lewis, man. They cut the gloves and they took him and they took out the watch. You know, I don't know, maybe Harold can remember, when Floyd Patterson became commissioner, he started talking about safety for fighters and safety for fighters. They got into the thumbless glove. It was a piece of shit. But it was put into practice, and the fighters complained about it. Right after
they complained about the thumbless gloves, Dusty?
Right. And nobody wanted the thumbless gloves, but Everlast began to manufacture those gloves, and they began to use them. The fighters complained that the thumbs were restricted. They would injure the thumbs and all that.
Wow.
The whole nine yards. When Patterson was out of the boxing commission's office, guess what? Those gloves disappeared. But what I'm saying to you...
Really?
It was never officially nullified. They just disappeared.
Only on your panel, Doc.
You know
why.
Not only that, because I remember... They had a big press conference. In fact, I have the gloves. They had a big press conference where they gave all the press a pair of today. Yeah, you're right. It's amazing.
Right.
Hey, Jim, okay, let's take a quick break again. Hold on, Dusty. Take a little quick break.
Let
we'll come back
on,
here, gang. Rocking and rolling as always. Don't move, gang. Doc Stanley, Sports and Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul, the channel, Sports and Depth, the show. Ladies and gentlemen, whether you're listening to me in Panama City, Panama, or Ybor, Florida, or in Russia, Germany, you can't top my panel. And I mean, every day, every show, it's an education. And I'm proud of them immensely. Don't move, gang. Here we go. Don't buy a shit another way.
Rainbow Soul, Doc Stanley Sports and Death on the Blake Radio Network.
Broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
All day, all night, all the time. BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul.
Sports in depth. Mic on, lights off. But the gang.
Doctor, can I continue?
Stop.
Can
you that? And then Rooney, I want you to dovetail on that.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Rooney.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead, Doug.
Thank you. When all of a sudden Patterson was out, and
mm-hmm.
correct me, Harold, if I'm wrong as I'm going along, because he's a man that could correct me. Nobody mm-hmm. else. But
right, you know what? Right. I think we're losing you.
Floyd Patterson, when he was out of office, all of a sudden never last stopped manufacturing those thumbless gloves.
We
tried them. They were no good. Now, at that same time, if I remember correctly, and please somebody correct me, that was the time when for fighter safety, they also eliminated the 6-ounce glove. It was from then on, 8 and 10. I don't remember.
You're wrong. Oh,
okay.
Okay, if I'm wrong, they got rid at that same time.
They got rid of the 6-ounce glove way before that situation.
Way before
yeah,
that.
Yeah, why?
Okay.
Why, Harold? Why?
Because it was so deadly because a lot of guys were dying
fire
back
safety.
In the day. And you got to understand, in 1960, like 63, 64, somewhere in there, they had a Senate committee investigation. They were getting ready to ban boxing, okay?
Really?
So many guys they were getting ready to ban boxing. And this was right after Griffin killed. Yeah, after Griffin
correct,
killed
correct.
Benedict Barrett.
Correct, exactly.
And the fact is that they were wearing 6-ounce gloves then. So the boxing commission, everybody in boxing, came to the point where they say, okay, we're not going to use 6-ounce gloves no more. And they went to 8-ounce gloves. And that's how that whole structure. Now, on the thumbless situation, the thumbless gloves went out of place because of me at Madison Square Garden. I called the whole show off because the fighters told me that their thumbs were getting numb because I asked them
exactly.
to use these gloves in the gym, come back to me, report. Everyone came back to say, Harold, the thumbs were getting numb after a certain amount of rounds using the glove. And I told the boxing commission in New York, I said, look here, fella, we can't do this show. We got to go back. What you need to do is, like, lace these gloves or tighten these gloves with the thumb closer to the other part of the glove and
design.
Do it that way.
Yeah.
They said, no, we ain't doing that.
I said,
then you know what? I'm calling this show off. They said, you can't do that. I said, yes, I can. Very easy. If I can't have no fighters, how the hell are you going to have a show? I mean, can
Good
you
job,
guys think? And so basically,
wow.
I called the show off.
Right.
John Carney got mad. He started, you know, they had their little thing. I said, okay, let's go upstairs. We went upstairs to Sonny Werbin and Jack Crumpy. Jack Crumpy said, Harold, it's a hell of a move you made. You should have talked to somebody, but you're right. If the fighters ain't going to fight, how are we going to have a show?
Right. Well, that's true. Well, this is why
but
I said
Harold,
that
Harold, that's why the gloves now.
Hold on, hold. Ladies first. Lady A, go ahead.
Yeah.
Harold, that's why the gloves
that are... Lady A. Go ahead.
That's
Lady
why
A,
the gloves that are designed now have that attachment to them, to the thumb?
That's because
I
made that.
I always wondered why that was like that. Okay.
Yeah, that's
exactly.
the reason why.
Well, that's why I was saying that Harold would be the one to correct what I knew, what I was inferred, what I told, the information that I got, because of the fact that they were talking about fire safety.
I was getting ready to say the same thing Harold said, but he beat me to it.
Ah.
Yeah, sure. Boxer safety. And then there were guys who were complaining that, I think, Harold, correct me again on this, that from 47 on up, you had to wear the 10-ounce gloves. And
yeah,
after
47, you had to wear a 10-ounce glove.
10-ounce glove. And,
wow.
And this is... Right, and this is where the tragedy of the Billy Collins came, because there were, you know, eyewitness accounts and what transpired in that dressing room Resto and Panama and the other dude, Angelo Curly, they had taken out enough of the stuffing.
Allegedly,
they were caught dead, man.
No, they didn't catch them. Okay, Dusty, you know what? Let's kind of slide off this a little bit. I don't want to keep talking on these guys. Let's let it be. Like I said, if Margarito is still boxing,
full story. Okay,
go ahead, give it to us. Clock it out. Give the rest of it. But no, we've seen this story and we've heard Harold. Real quick, hold on, Dusty. Harold, your thoughts? Was Panama Loose 100% guilty?
I can't say he's 100% guilty because they didn't have nobody that couldn't clarify who did it. You had four or five people in that room and everything else. And if I'm not mistaken, under the law, have to have the evidence and know the facts or have fingerprints or something that clarify that the person did it. I mean, but they had nothing. All it was, my whole thought of what I saw is that it was a kangaroo court. I mean, basically, they had to convict somebody, and that's what they did. And so the Boxing Commission could look good. If they did not convict somebody, then it would look like they was a sham. There was already, the Boxing Commission's always been questioned quite a few times. But at this particular time, they had to penalize somebody, and Panama Luz was a good scapegoat. They had no money, they couldn't get a good lawyer, and that was the bottom line.
And it's amazing that, once again, it's the minority. It's amazing. It's amazing how the justice system never works.
Oh, my God.
Come on.
Who was Angelo Curly?
You always hear Panama Luz. Am I right, Harold?
Yeah. Why?
Yeah.
Because
right,
Panama
Harold?
Luz
yeah.
was...
You don't hear nobody else but Panama. It's like Don King.
Right.
It's like Don King. And
Panama
boxing,
Luz was...
Dusty, hold tight. It's like Don King. Everybody tells you that boxing is this dirty, seedy business. Yet, and when everybody falls in the mud, the only guy that comes up with mud is Don King. It's amazing. You know,
what about Bob Arum, though? What about Bob Arum, though?
Yeah, but no. The Arums don't have no mud on them. The Duvals don't have no mud on them. Drusen don't have no mud on them. The only guy with mud.
No, Arum does have mud on him. It's just the way now he got out of him. I mean, he admitted to the federal government that he gave Bob Lee bribe money to get guys in the ratings. He said let's talk about what the truth is. I mean, the fact is that the Bob Arum is in the script of an investigation when they convicted Bob Lee, even the other guy with the who was fat at one time, now he's skinny. Cedric Kushner. He's another
Kushner,
one.
That,
okay?
That, that's
and
right
he's
guy,
still
yeah.
got a license. All right, so everybody want to get techno about it? Let's talk the truth. Stop all the bullshit, lying, and this and that. Let's talk the truth. These guys did a crime. They did a crime. And they're still in the business. Okay? They're still in the business. And that's the bottom line. I mean, so why are we keep playing around with it and thinking that these guys didn't do nothing? They did something. They admit that they did it. And it's in the script of the FBI that
they
admit to the fact.
They were just 30. Yeah, exactly.
All right,
exactly.
So why is now the boxing world
Calm down. Go ahead, Harold.
I mean, why did the Boxing Commission still let them have license? That's what I'm telling you. If I do something, shoot, they wanted to take my license for hitting a guy low in the box. I had to have a hearing for that. And I think you've got to be kidding me.
I was going to say to add to what Harold's saying is you don't even really have to go that far. I mean, look at just the mere fact that Margarito's still fighting and that he's promoting him. I mean, right there tells you the kind of guy you're dealing with. I don't know. I mean,
Well, I mean, it's long been known that. Hold on. Wait a minute. It's Little Coco. You still with us, baby?
Absolutely. I'm just enjoying the convo. Let me say this, Doc. One of the reasons that you heard so much about Panama, it seems like nobody else. You have to remember that about a month after all of that went down, Artie Curly passed away. Like a month after that, a month after the whole thing went down, Curly had like a heart attack or something. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know, the possibility of upcoming trial or the whole scandal, you know, is too much for the guy to take or what, but Curly passed away like a month after the whole thing went down.
I knew him for years, and he worked every corner, and he was blacklisted. The man didn't get a job at all. He couldn't train a fly or work in any corner.
Where was he from, Dusty?
Huh?
Where was he from?
I don't have the slightest. All I know is I met him in Stillman's, and he used to work every corner. The man always made money. He was always well connected with the freaking promoters or the managers or whoever. Always got a job at the corner. If you see him, there were 8 bouts in St. Nick's Arena. Curly had 8 bouts to work on a freaking corner.
Are you serious, Dusty?
Serious as a heart attack, man. That's how. So when he teamed up with Paramount Lewis was Resto's main trainer. He was just a corner man making his money. That's what it is. And the fact of the matter is, yes, that in that Grand Central Station of the dressing room, nobody knows who went where, but eyewitness accounts, and I read a lot of the stuff how they both disappeared into the bathroom. And the only reason that Resto got caught was the fact that he, knowing that he had won, and this was a welterweight elimination thing, it was supposed to be a welterweight elimination, that's the way I read it. The winner was supposed to get a title fight, and they were leaning towards Billy Collins. And Resto went over to congratulate the guy, and the guy's trainer noticed the gloves were lopsided.
Actually, it was his father, Dust, that noticed that. His father went over to congratulate him.
Right, his father.
Billy Collins' father was shaking his gloves and congratulating him. And when Resto tried to go back to the corner.
Dusty, you being the fighter, and also Harold, that now, the padding taken out, Harold, isn't that a detriment to the fighter, too?
Oh, it's very much. No. But let me just say something to you, man.
Go ahead.
I mean, and I'm going to just say, because, you know, you guys don't know.
Go ahead.
But, I mean,
enlighten us, baby.
Back in the day, okay, when we did get the gloves in those days, the guys used to take the gloves and hit the gloves real hard and put the padding back in the glove.
Soften them up.
Okay?
Really?
And soften them up, okay?
Exactly.
The commissioner was right there watching that, all right?
Exactly.
Back in the day, okay? So when the guys put the gloves on so the gloves can be more softer and it can be, you know, it's not as stiff because we always got new gloves every time we fought back
new
in
gloves
the day.
They hurt like
and they broke them in that way. So, I mean, the situation was the reason why it was horsehair in it. And so it was easier to break that down and then push that hair, most of that hair, back into the glove where it's back in back of it instead of in the front of where your knuckle's going to be. So that is something else that we did back in the day. But then they changed the pattern inside and they made it more form. Then, you know, and then they got out of the horsehair situation. But, I mean,
How do fighters themselves prefer, your opinion, and Dusty, I like yours too, do they prefer working with Everlast gloves or Reyes?
Say that again?
The fighters themselves.
Your preference
you know, you
gloves,
and,
but it Reyes Everlast.
Yeah, they prefer Everlast to Reyes when you're working.
I mean, I like Reyes. I mean, I had no problem with any of the gloves, but I mean, I like Reyes because Reyes felt more form on your hand and everything, and that's what punches liked it anyway. And I like to do, you know, the reason why I like fight Reyes because the punchers think they can punch, so I let them think, have that notion of mine. When they hit me, nothing happened, then the fool come out. So that was the reason why.
But there was a label, this guy, bro, I love him. But Coco, let me tell you, there was a label in my day called Toughwear. And
that's what I use.
Toughwear was very, very tight. It was like a Reyes gloves. I don't know.
Yeah, but they're good for bag work, Toughwear.
No, Toughwear was for fighting too.
But they never used Toughwear for the major fights in the ring.
But I used to train with Toughwear. Well, the commission always came up with Everlast. There's no such thing as Grants or in my day, Grants or Reyes or anything. It was all Everlast, a monopoly. But there was little rinky-dink stores or sports stores that would sell Toughwear. My shoes were Toughwear. My cup was Toughwear.
Yeah.
My gloves were Toughwear.
Toughwear was the best equipment. It was the best equipment back then.
Toughwear was the best equipment, Harold?
Oh, yeah.
They're very durable. I got all my robes
and my trunks. And, you know how fancy I was. That was all coming from Toughwear.
You know what's funny? We got 2 minutes left. You know what's funny? Walt Frazier, who was the first athlete with the crossover sneaker with Pumas, and everybody talking about Converse, and Clyde told me, he said, you know, as you talking about Everlast and the software and Reyes, and Clyde said, you know, the best sneaker was made by Adidas, but you know, he endorsed Pumas and it worked like that. So, gang, we're in the closing seconds here. We're going to close out. Dusty's going to tell everybody goodbye. We're going to get ourselves back together again one more time. Sports In Depth on the Blake Radio Network. Rainbow Soul is a channel. Sports In Depth is a show. What you learn here, what you hear here, you will hear no place else. And if you left here after the day, you're a better educated person. Leave you with three thoughts. Live your life today as if to stand before God tomorrow. Service to others is the rent you pay for your space on earth. Life's most persistent and most urgent question is, what are you doing for others? Dr. Luther King, the one before, is Muhammad Ali. And I love that line by Beyonce. God is in control of everything. Okay, gang, we're going to close it out. Dusty's just going to tell everybody goodbye. One last time, Larry Hardis is going to say sayonara for us, and we'll have the gang back here next week. Harold, we're glad to have you back, baby. Glad
nice to have you back, Harold.
Well, I'm out of here this week.
Congratulations,
I'm back to Florida.
When you leaving, Harold?
I'm looking to get out of here Wednesday.
Wednesday? Okay, don't move, gang. Let's close out with a little quick chat of here.
This concludes another edition of Sports In Depth with Doc Stanley. We thank you for listening and encouraging you to tell a friend about Sports In Depth with Doc Stanley. You can hear that and many other great programs on the Blake Radio Network. Have a great day.
Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
All day, all night, all the time. BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul.
One last time, McGangers Hell here. Doc Stanley, Sports In Depth on the Blake Radio Network. Rainbow Soul, the channel, Sports In Depth is the show. And they were here. Harold, bringing boxing back to the heights it used to have. Western Lady A, the first lady of boxing. Mel Smith, Junior Little Coco, the man in the tight with the mask, and we still know who you are. And Destino Baby Lewis. Gang, love you. Te amo. Dusty, tell everybody good night, and we'll see you during the week and next Sunday right here with the good Lord willing. Doc Stanley, Sports In Depth.
Good night, guys.
God bless. Hey, a belated
good night.
Happy birthday, Lady A.
Thank you.
God bless.
Yes, Lady A.
Happy birthday. I'm going to go to Mondel's, Coco, get you yellow tights.
Oh, yellow, no problem.
Coco, next week, bring back a mask. Let it cover your whole face, though, baby.
Hey, Dusty, I'm going to Mondel's to buy you a Manny Ramirez jersey. Talk to you later.
Oh, Lady A, thanks. God bless you. That was funny. How you love me? Yeah, for VR.
Good night,
y'all.
God
bless you, safe trip, we love you, miss you, baby.
Good night, y'all.
You got him, Lady A. He ain't said he's babbling. He's still babbling. Bloop, 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 bloop.
Take care. God bless.